We're looking at an agenda today of a first having work session for possible introduction of speaker approved bills, and then we will have a work session on Senate Bill 708, and then finish up with a public hearing on House Bill 3643. And with that, then we can open up a work session on introduction of speaker approved bills. Representative Ackland, can you introduce it for us, please?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move Legislative Council Draft 3686. Be introduced as a committee bill.
Thank you. Representative Backlund moves Legislative Draft 3686 be introduced as a committee bill. Discussion. Colleagues, first, let me just kind of give you a summary here. We've back quite a few months ago, our Rules Committee passed out a then was House Bill 3442. It's the Oregon Wine Board bill. It's a restructuring of the Oregon Wine Board. And it was kind of interesting, just as a courtesy, we sent it to Ways and Means because it meant shifting some Department of Ag employees to this new semi-independent agency. It actually didn't have to be done at that time. It could have gone first to the floor for a vote, over to the Senate for a vote, and then Ways and Means just would have made the corrections after the respective floor votes. And it continues to stay in Ways and Means, and reasons that have not yet been made clear. So we're just trying to get this to the floor for a vote. So it'll come back as a Rules Committee bill. I'm pretty sure it'll come back to Rules Committee to then have to vote on one more time. So other discussion?
Mr. Chair, as I recall, all this does really is bring the wine board in under the umbrella. Apropos the issue we talked about yesterday, and establishes it as a way of promoting and maintaining Oregon's absolutely astounding and fabulous wines and helping to sell them in places other than Oregon. I do my share of making sure that sales are good, but I'm still in favor of this bill.
Yeah. Well, the one thing you may recall from the testimony was that the wine industry is still kind of in its infancy, and it still needs some help. And as a matter of fact, I mean, statistics show we're actually losing some market share. The Oregon industry is losing market share, and this is a good way to help. It's a good bill, so that's why I just want to give it another chance. Any objection to introducing this as a committee bill? Seeing none, so ordered. And we'll close that work session and open up a work session on Senate Bill 708. And let's see, Representative Moss Anderson and Representative Bates, you want to come forward?
That's the right bill, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lori Monis Anderson, state representative from District 50, Gresham. This is House Bill, Senate Bill 708 is a wonderful bill. It should have no problems right now. We've been had some amendments that you already see, and I know that we've discussed this a little bit before. Just a little history. Nurse practitioners have been independent providers in Oregon since the mid-70s, and they've had prescriptive authority since 1979. And over the last many decades, they've demonstrated safe, effective, and cost-effective care in both the urban and the rural areas of our state. There is a barrier that exists, and this bill tends to take care of that. They need to be able to dispense drugs for some of their patients. That means delivery of a prescription drug in a container labeled for subsequent administration to or use by a patient. There are many times when a nurse practitioner will see a patient on the weekend, after hours, or the patient is not able to get to a pharmacy because the distance is too far, 20 to 30 miles. And if they would have prescription drugs in their clinic, they would be able to dispense them to the patient when the patient was there. with the current economy and the number of individuals who have limited access to care, expansion of this authority to nurse practitioners would really help preserve health and manage disease for many Oregonians. And at this point, I'd like Representative Bates to explain to you the negotiations that we've gone through with the Oregon Medical Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is what I always like to see when I'm sitting in committee, a consensus bill now, and one in which both parties should be congratulated for coming together, both the Oregon Medical Association and the Oregon Nurse Association, to bring you a consensus bill that all parties agree to. The basic problem they're trying to deal with is, as been outlined by Representative Mons Anderson, is that we have financial and geographical barriers at very specific times to getting appropriate medications to patients. Some of the geographical barriers are pretty obvious if you're in a rural area. They're not quite so obvious if it's a situation where you're in a large community, but it might be 20 miles to a pharmacy that's open 24 hours a day. Or if you're in communities the size of even Medford or Roseburg or even Salem, where pharmacies commonly close down about 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon and close down about 7 or 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. In my particular community, there's no pharmacy, retail pharmacy, open after 7 or 8 in the evening, and none on Saturdays, and none after 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock on Sundays. That means if a patient needs a prescription and you don't happen to have the samples for that prescription, which is very common, that patient has to go to the emergency room, spend 3 or 4 hours there, and potentially spend $300 or $400 there for a simple prescription for, say, a strep throat, get the prescription at the pharmacy, at the hospital, and finally go home. That is both a barrier financially and barrier time-wise, and it's a very common occurrence. Hospitals are not allowed to give out medications to patients without that patient actually being seen in the emergency room. And that's a very expensive operation to go through. This bill answers those basic problems for us. The financial barrier especially is the one I'm most concerned about. And nurse practitioners like physicians having the ability to handle these drugs, I think, is very reasonable. Understand that the nurse practitioners have an ability to write prescriptions that are very similar to physicians. The difference here is they can hand out, at the present time, samples, but could not hand out medications they have in their office otherwise. I think it's a good bill. I think we reached a good consensus on it, and I hope you can move it forward now. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you. And Susan King, can you come forward? Tim Martinez, how about you, too? Ms. King, you have any comments on this?
Yes. Chairman Doyle and members of the committee, my name is Susan King, for the record, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I think both Representative Mons Anderson and Representative Bates explained for you that we do have a bill that represents a consensus not only between the Oregon Medical Association and ONA, but also earlier work that we did with the pharmacists. Just to state again for the record, we're really looking for dispensing authority for those instances, not for every drug that all nurse practitioners can prescribe, but for those instances where there's either a geographic barrier, even if that occurs within an urban area, or there's a financial barrier. And I think we all, unfortunately, know the reality of the economy these days. In my clinical practice, I see more and more patients every single day who cannot afford prescriptions, who might have a child with an ear infection that's acute, the child needs treatment tonight, but the parents don't have the money nor the means to get to a pharmacy to obtain the medication. So the amendments that we've brought forward to you today contain several changes from the last time that you saw this bill. These are contained in the -4 amendments. Two of the changes actually were concerns that the Board of Pharmacy raised. One was clarifying that the bill actually allows nurse practitioners to dispense to their patients only, which was always our intention. Second of all, that these are medications that are in prepackaged format, which again is perfectly acceptable to nurse practitioners. And then the other changes that are coming forward are those changes that we have worked out with the Oregon Medical Association. An example clarifying the types of geographic access that we're talking to that exist in terms of barriers. And then lastly, that you will be provided with a report in the next legislative session about at least the numbers of nurse practitioners who have applied for and been granted the dispensing authority. So we'd ask you for your support of this bill, and we appreciate the work that all the other organizations have done with us.
Thank you. Ms. Martinez, you participate in this group?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Tim Martinez, on behalf of the Oregon Medical Association. I do want to thank Susan and Martin Taylor and other folks from the Oregon Nurses Association, as well as Representative Bates and Representative Mona Sanderson and you, Mr. Chair, for putting this together to try to come up with this compromise. I think it is one that everybody is pleased with and would urge its adoption.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you. And let's see. I think we had at least some note. You heard from the Board of Pharmacy, Representative Moss Anderson?
Not the Board of Pharmacy, the Pharmacists
Association.
Are all right.
But yeah, they have been neutral on this.
We do not.
Continue to be neutral. And I had an email earlier from the Board of Pharmacy just indicating still some reservations, but in light of compromise, I think that this group has worked out. I think it makes much more sense to move this legislation forward. So with that, Representative, you want to move the Dash 4 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 708.
Okay. Representative Moss Anderson has moved adoption of the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 708. Any discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. It may refer to the amendment for Representative Moss Anderson. We have an email from the Board of Pharmacy about the site inspections that were not included in the amendment, and that seems to be their concern, that they only get to make the initial one. And so was there a reason that concern was not addressed in the amendment, or what is the concern of more than one site inspection?
Usually the Board of Nursing will be setting up rules for this, but I would think that maybe ONA could address that question better than I could.
Yeah. Ms. King, you want to come back one more time?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Verger. Actually, we had several meetings with the Board of Pharmacy. I am aware of that email. I just saw it a few minutes before the hearing. That issue was not specifically brought up in our discussions with the Board of Pharmacy. But the way that we envision the enforcement of this authority to occur is, first of all, the final authority regarding any problems with dispensing will rest with the Board of Nursing. But the Board of Pharmacy does, upon receipt of a complaint, have the ability to come in and inspect the drug storage, the drug security, the labeling procedures. So the Board of Pharmacy really has a fairly broad opportunity to come and look at the procedures that are contained within that particular nurse practitioner's practice. If they find any problems or any violations of law or rules, then, of course, the Board of Nursing will need to do further investigation and would need to impose any discipline, but that is the way that the authority has gone for many years. Any other provider can raise an issue with the healthcare provider, but ultimately it is that provider's licensing board that would impose any discipline. So this is very consistent with the way enforcement of practice rules have gone traditionally. So again, the Board of Pharmacy does have the option to come in and look at the procedures, but not to impose any final discipline that might occur.
Okay. Paula, sure. So the email indicates that there is a shift to the Board of Nursing. Would you respond to that as far as receiving a complaint and being able to come in? Are you saying this doesn't change that? Because the email indicates that it makes a shift.
Yes. Chairman Doyle and Representative Verger, it's unclear to me what is meant by a shift. This makes no change in the way that a professional discipline or the enforcement of professional practice would occur.
Okay.
The Board of Nursing has always held final disciplinary authority over any of our licenses. And this bill did specifically allow the Board of Pharmacy the opportunity to investigate. So it's unclear to me exactly what is meant by that.
Very good. I just wanted to get that on the record, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Yeah, and to that issue as well, in the email that I saw as well as you, Representative, that it seemed that the issue of the Board of Pharmacy was that they wanted the ability to come in and inspect without a complaint being filed. Their concern was that complaints may not get filed and then they don't have the authority to come in and inspect. And I guess I'd just like to see how this works over the next 2 years, if it actually is an issue that needs to be addressed. Maybe at the next legislative session we can look at it. But, you know, I wasn't convinced that, you know, they needed that additional authority. Okay. When we have a complaint, if it's complaint driven, they'll be involved. Without it, then, you know, let's just see if that's really a problem.
Okay.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, I'm assuming, and I think you said this, but let me put it in a slightly different language. I'm assuming that if the Board of Pharmacy were to receive a complaint and to inspect the premises and discover that some of the rules were being violated about storage or labeling or something, mm-hmm. that a subsequent complaint to the Board of Nursing, which was substantiated, would result in the Board of Nursing taking action in connection with that nurse. Is that a correct assumption on my part?
Yes, Representative Doyle and Representative Barnhart, yes, that's the way it has always worked. Oftentimes, if there is complaint about a practice of any licensed healthcare provider, there are several agencies involved. If it's an RN practicing in a hospital, the health division may discover the practice problem and then refer that issue to the Board of Nursing, and it would be no different. If the Board of Pharmacy discovered violation of some statute or rules related to drug dispensing, then the Board of Nursing would be obligated to investigate that as any other complaint they would.
And a follow-up, and that's just the basic duty of the Board of Nursing.
Correct, yes.
All right. Thank you. So the motion is to adopt the A4 amendments. Further discussion? Any objection? If not, so ordered. Representative Sanderson?
I move Senate Bill 708-.
No, as amended.
As amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Montes Anderson has moved Senate Bill 708 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Okay, we call the roll.
Representative Backman.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Montes Anderson.
Aye.
Sandy Virgin.
Aye.
And Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye, and Close is excused for that. And any concerns with putting this on the consent calendar? All right. So ordered. That closes our work session as well on Senate Bill 708. And we will open up a public hearing on House Bill 36. Well, let's hold back a minute. Sanities. I don't know if you want to speak to it on the floor.
No, okay. I mean, I could, but...
This is better. You get more
work. You always like the camels, all the canaries.
Okay, let's go back on the record, and we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3643, and we welcome Representative Partridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, State Representative Rob Partridge, House District 6, which is Medford. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for hearing House Bill 3643. If you look at the top of House Bill 3643, you'll notice who the chief co-sponsors are. They happen to be all the members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety, as well as the chairs of both the House and Senate Judiciary Committee, all of which have spent a substantial amount of time working with the public safety arena, not only this session, but in previous sessions. We bring you House Bill 3643 predominantly because of the fact that we think that there needs to be, the governor's office needs to look at, and the legislature, frankly, at some point in time need to look at the restructuring of public safety in order to better coordinate and communicate the various public safety entities. You will find, if you spend any substantial time in the public safety arena, that there seems to, on many occasions, be a great deal of interdepartmental rivalry and other things that happen. And as we seek, especially during this budget cycle, to seek efficiencies in state government and to seek efficiencies in what we do in government, as well as improve the quality of information and the quality of recidivism, decreasing recidivism in our public safety system throughout the state of Oregon, I think that looking at coordinating these efforts in a much more reasonable manner is probably something we should look at. The Public Safety Committee did not mandate this time. We didn't try and do it within the current budget environment due to the budget constraints and the timing that this would take. All House Bill 3643 asks is that the governor look at, in consultation with the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, which was set up a substantial time ago to coordinate policy issues for the state of Oregon in regard to criminal justice. Phil Lemon coordinates that, is the director for the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. The governor appoints the members of the Criminal Justice Commission. They serve in doing the Oregon sentencing guidelines and examining those, as well as varying other things, like they administer the juvenile crime prevention grants that go to each of their counties. There is also legislative representation. Currently, I believe that it's both Senator Minnis and Representative Shetterly are the current members of the Criminal Justice Commission. So it is a wider group of buy-in, and we merely ask for the consultation in regard to the progress as to what's gone on. Also, if you look at paragraph number 7, we left this fairly broad, and I would call this bill very vanilla. It says that in addition to the plan required by subsection 1, the governor may develop and present alternative plans for the creation of the Department of Public Safety. We tried to mandate at least what he should look at in item number 1. In talking with various members in both bodies who spent a substantial amount of time in public safety, if he has a better alternative he wants to present, he could bring that forward as well. So that's what the bill asks for. We think that it is an important step in looking at trying to coordinate these efforts and trying to limit administrative overhead, and also in tracking the programs and their effectiveness to decrease recidivism throughout the criminal justice system in the state of Oregon. Just as an example, each of these agencies contracts to do their own background checks. Just an example, each of these agencies has their own computer systems that really don't coordinate or talk to each other, and we can't follow someone from the front end of the system all the way through the back end of the system. Those are just some examples of why we think the efficiencies are important, and this is something we believe that the governor's office should look at, because he's the one who has control over those agencies and would have to administer the agencies into the future. I know they're going to come testify against it, but we think it's something they should do. So,
any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note, Representative Patridge, that line 19, it says that in creating the department, the governor shall, and lists a bunch of things. And then at line 26, it says the governor shall cause legislation to be drafted, carry out the creation of the department. Does this bill, the way it's written now, does it actually set up the department, or does it actually order the governor to set up the department, or does it simply order the governor to prepare legislation, draft legislation to create the department? It looks to me like it's going both ways.
So the council wrote this, and they knew that the intent of the bill was to have a plan that had a piece of legislation to move forward. It didn't mandate that the governor set up the department, okay, just in consideration of the plan.
So
it shall do the following items in consideration of the plan in item number one, in section one, excuse me.
Okay, so to the extent that that two might create the department, maybe we need to make a change? Sub two?
I don't believe that we need to make the change based upon, if the committee feels more comfortable making the change on item number two, I'm happy to do that. I don't think that was the intent. The intent was for the legislation that was to be drafted.
Right.
Those things shall be taken into consideration, and I think that's how it reads, and I didn't want in any way, shape, or form to say demanded that he do this. We just wanted a bill that they come forward with that then we can have a legitimate legislative debate about, rather than starting at ground zero next legislative session and trying to create something from whole cloth.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Berger.
Yes. Representative Patridge, what's broken? I know we're trying to fix something, but what's broken?
I think what we're trying to fix and what's broken is a lot of the interagency rivalry that goes on, as well as a better coordination of efforts, as well as the consolidation of administrative overhead and doing things, you know, just doing simple things like information technology in terms of getting the data to follow programs through, to follow offenders from when they're first sentenced in the system all the way through the end of the system, when doing background checks. There's a lot of, you know, accounting functions, all those types of things, I think, is where we're looking to gain some efficiencies and also gain some efficiencies in the coordination of these various departments. Right now, I think if you look, for example, like at the state police, they have a lot of ancillary functions, have somebody who is a sworn law enforcement officer who is in charge of the whole agency. But just as an example of what we used in this budget, they also have the state fire marshal underneath them. They, during this budget cycle, have not hired some people as a result of the fact that the federal government failed to pay us money from the fire marshal. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that we need to look at in terms of this, in my opinion.
Follow-up
questions?
Just looking at it, I agree with you that there probably could be a lot better cooperation among the agencies, but these agents, departments are pretty self-protected just by virtue of what they do. And so they don't reach out as much, and I agree. But wouldn't you agree that they can cooperate more without any kind of legislation, without forming a Department of Public Safety? This is a big department.
Mr. Chair and Representative Virgie, yes, it would be a fairly large department. And I think that, frankly, I don't think that they will work together to coordinate a lot of items. They haven't done that in the past. There's not a lot of efficiencies that are achieved. There's not the tracking that needs to occur. Each, you know, a lot of these departments have different grant programs. You look at the recidivism rates, everyone looks at theirs differently. There's no coordination of effort in many of these areas. In the outreach to local counties, it's not a consistent outreach, even though the county people are kind of point people. They have to go to, you know, several different people in the state bureaucracy in order to deal with things. I think would be more efficient, both at the local level and coming from the local level.
One last question, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under C, it says forensic laboratories, plural. Does that mean you have hopes of opening up our forensic laboratories that are now closed, such as the one in Goose Bay?
Representative Doyle and Representative Verger, certainly I'd like to open the forensics lab in Coos Bay, but as a good representative from Kaiser now, who grew up in Coos Bay, I believe.
Close.
And yourself, I think that the laboratories were just those laboratories which are defined by statute that the state does run. But I think we do need to look at the coordination of centralizing some of those facilities. If you have something in Coos Bay, you know, can you have a medical examiner and the forensics piece and maybe your OIA coordination piece in the same building, rather than everyone needing to have their own building in various parts of town, as occurs in many other areas of the state. Under a Department of Public Safety, those activities could be better coordinated, I believe.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I asked that question not really being facetious. It's a very serious problem that has occurred in our part of the world on the forensic laboratories that have been closed. We cannot even investigate homicides with any expediency at all. So that I didn't want you to think I was being funny. It's very serious. So,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger,
our subcommittee chair of the Public Safety Subcommittee, I think, is very well aware of that issue as well.
Yeah, we are very well aware of that, and actually we bought back 17. Yesterday we passed out the budget that bought back 17 of the 17 more positions in forensics laboratories. So that's a good thing for the state of Oregon.
Further questions? Representative, just I think the kind of going along the same lines, I think, as Representative Berger on just looking at structure. I mean, are we just adding one more layer of a management structure here, putting somebody between these agencies and the governor, or I mean, what's the I guess where's the efficiencies in, you know, what looks like just adding an extra layer of government?
Representative Doyle, I believe that it's not going to add an extra layer of government. Actually, I think it's going to facilitate better coordination, hopefully eliminate some of the multiple layers of government that we have at the varying levels. Each of these divisions have a personnel office, have an accounting structure, have a whole bunch of ancillary functions that they need for administrative pieces. I think that some of these activities can be substantially coordinated at a more centralized level in order to deal with some of those functions, as well as provide better efficiency that gets, as Representative Butler and our committee is fond of saying, gets water to the end of the row more often, because we get more money out on the street, hopefully, rather than administrative overhead. And so that's the thought, but it depends on how this thing comes back and how the governor chooses to structure this. And my concern, and I think the concern of the individuals who signed on as the chief sponsors, is this discussion needs to take place, and we can't just start anew at the beginning of the next legislative session. I'm not necessarily wed to this particular package in terms of exactly how this department should be structured. We just wanted these items to be explored and allow the governor to come back and provide an opportunity after he's had an opportunity to look at the various state agencies to provide a structure that he thinks may work. He may not include some of these departments in there. He may not include the psychiatric review board. He may not include some of these other things based upon how it works. This was just a bill to get the discussion started and to get a concept so that we don't start anew.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Patridge, I think one of the discussions that I'm sensing that's brewing under the surface as we continue our journey in this building is that there is a woeful lack of coordination in the information technology dynamic. And is that a reasonable starting place for some of these agencies, rather if there is opposition to creating another layer of government? Is the coordination of some of the technology something that would provide a better cohesiveness?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, I will tell you that since the 1999 session when I arrived as a freshman in this building, we've been trying to coordinate the information technology. There's been substantial resistance from all agencies in state government who have attempted to undermine those efforts in the public safety arena specifically. We have changed state statute. We have put in budget notes. We have reserved pieces and parts of the money for those IT budgets. We have provided money to look at studying this problem, and those attempts were circumvented as well. When you have these varying directors trying to do multiple things and don't want to be supportive of trying to coordinate efforts, is a very difficult and daunting task. I am now nearing the end of my third session here. We have made some progress this session, and I'm somewhat encouraged, but as we walk away from this building, many of the things that we asked to have happen don't happen. And so I'm not at all we're making some efforts on information technology this time. I'm committed to do those. The governor's office has worked with us to some degree, but they've worked with us every session for the past 4 years and during the interim, and they still have not been able to get the agencies to even cooperate with each other to move something forward. And I have huge files, and I've spent countless hours on this, and have changed state laws and have reserved money in the budgets. So when I say that there is some infighting and some interdepartmental rivalry and jealousy on some of these issues, believe me that it is substantial. I've spent, this is now my second session on the Public Safety Subcommittee, and I chaired it this time, and I believe that there are issues, and I believe that that's why the members in a bipartisan fashion have signed up for this bill to at least have a starting point for next session.
Further discussion? you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Let's bring Jim Botwinus and Mary Botkin forward.
Hello, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Botwinus. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. I'm not here today to testify in favor or against this bill. I am here to open the door to some questions that we as an organization certainly have about the viability of the Department of Public Safety in Oregon. And that mostly comes from some of my experience visiting with troopers from other states and how DPSs have worked in those states and how they have some places have been successes, other places have been failures, depending upon how they've been structured and put together and who the director may happen to be of a DPS. So our questions basically revolve around, let's see what I have, like six of them here. Does the concept save the state of Oregon taxpayers money? And if it does, how does it do it? That should be a primary goal, especially where our department has problems enough getting money that we now spend more money to create a basically a mega agency in our opinion. Does this concept make any of the agencies that are listed to become a part of the DPS concept more efficient? Are they going to operate better because we have a DPS versus them being individual standalones as they are now? And if so, how does that happen? Does this concept help the Oregon State Police out of years of financial problems? And if it does, how does it do it? Does it make sense to remove the direct link between the governor's office and the Department of State Police as it currently exists? And under the structure that I've seen, it would in fact do that. Would this concept create a bureaucratic agency that in the end would not be able to meet its mission or fail its mission? And what would the selection process be for the head of the DPS? That is probably the most critical component of the whole thing, as how that selection process is and who the head of that agency is going to be in creating a DPS. These are only probably a few of the questions that could surface as a result of conversations that could take place as part of this. But from our perspective, these are minimal questions that would determine whether a DPS could be successful in Oregon or be an absolute failure in Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Ms. Botkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And, you know, I guess we're kind of like Mr. Botwinus, that we're not really here kind of in favor or opposed. It actually presents some intriguing opportunities to do some things differently in Oregon. I don't think it's a new concept nationwide. As Mr. Botwin has pointed out, there are other states that do this currently, and I think that, you know, we could learn from their mistakes and perhaps do something better here. But, you know, I'm struck by kind of what it is we're trying to accomplish. And, you know, no matter which committee I go to, I kind of sit in the room and witness the frustration of the elected officials sitting where you're sitting today about trying to figure out how to get a better handle on how we do our business in state government, and even more frustrating is how they do their business in local governments. So let me just say a couple of things. I know that Representative Patridge is very interested in more coordinated efforts with information technology. I think that is an admirable goal, and in fact, in a lot of areas, we very strongly favor and support his efforts in that area. And I will give you the same caution I have given to him publicly and privately, and that is, remember that when you're talking about public safety, we have the need for a secure system. And, you know, the information that we keep on our computer systems, whether it's the state police or the Department of Corrections or Oregon State Hospital, this is very sensitive data. So, you know, as you look at information technology, you always have to build in special firewalls around certain pieces of it. And you know what? I know enough to know that I don't know enough to know what to do about that. But there are people who are certified smart out there who can do that. Okay, having said that, then, you know, then we kind of work our way through and say, okay, communications. You know, Mr. Botwin is not, we don't need a degree to figure out that all public safety officials ought to be able to talk to each other. They ought to all be on the same, you know, frequencies. There shouldn't be any kind of breakdown in communication technology. There is. There's one thing that will solve that problem, money. You know, what we have to do is we have to replace the equipment and give our people in the field the technology that is integrated. And that's just a matter of replacing current technology, and that costs money. Personnel, you know, I've often wondered why they needed so many personnel officers around the state of Oregon. Every agency has at least one, most two or three. And then, you know, they have more of them over here in the Department of Administrative Services, and we got a few. I mean, they're scattered all over, and we have one rep for a unit. The Department of Corrections has two. You know, we go up against about six. So, you know, I guess it takes six of them to do what we do with one or two. But be that as it may, certainly we think you can get rid of a lot of those people. Rivalry, there's always going to be rivalry. I don't think you get rid of that too much, but I think that you can diminish some of the negative effects of rivalry. Right now, we don't know what it will cost us to properly fund public safety in the state of Oregon. And if we think of public safety as starting with that 911 call and going all the way through the system, we don't know what it costs us to do that. And I think that's a challenge that all of us who work in the field need to accept. Background checks, I couldn't agree with you more. Everybody does them, and everybody does them at a different level. I can't figure out why you didn't include the lottery commission here, since they seem to do a lot of them, and they take Jim's uniformed officers and put them over in the lottery office instead of putting them out on the streets. And, Mr. Chair, I know I've heard you complain about that. And, you know, I think that, you know, there are questions that need to be answered. Does this bill answer all those questions? Probably not. Does it start some of the debate? Maybe. Is it the right format? I haven't got a clue. And so that's why I say, you know, we're not either kind of in favor or opposed. We're certainly open to the discussion. And I think that all of us who work in the public safety arena or work with people who do work in the public safety arena share your frustration and your commitment to finding a better way of doing it and eliminating the duplications where they exist and streamlining it where we can and getting more people out there in the front lines to do the work that really needs to be done instead of kind of sitting in the back rooms trying to figure out what work needs to be done. Okay. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess what I'd like to say about this is that we live at a time, obviously, that public safety and homeland security is really important. We have some real blicks in what we're doing. That's one thing. But I, just in looking at the structure and in working with public safety over a number of years, this looks to me like it's not manageable. Also, it doesn't look like to me we're getting where we need to be. I don't want anyone left with the impression that people in Oregon who are involved in public safety don't get along. Let me just say, in Coos County, Coos Bay puts up one police officer, the county puts up one. There's a homicide team, and they pick the people that are the best in that, and there's a state police officer, and they participate. And that is because they've taken the best minds in homicide that can do that in that area, and it's a wonderful example of cooperation. Let me give you an example of a terrible mismatch in communication. When the Carissa landed on the beach and the time came they were going to set it afire, someone call the health department because of the air quality, and they called the state, and they said, you need to protect the schools. And someone, even though they had had meetings from September until December, through December, someone called the school and said, you need to send all the school children home because they're going to burn the ship and the air quality. Well, of course, the real order and the right order was the lockdown of the schools. And no one goes home because no one is home in most of the homes in the middle of the day. But there were enough people in the schools that knew that that was not the order, so they locked down. These kinds of things happen where you've done the best training. I'm sure there are problems that exist, but for me, there needs to be a lot more discussion for the structure than this particular structure. It's too big.
Further questions? And I don't, did you have a response to that for Mr. Collins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I guess all I can say in response to your comment is the biggest issue for us, at least as I see, and I can tell you the superintendent and I, once in a while, we get together and have little conversations, and I think he shares the same concern, is communication is our biggest downfall in the public safety arena. Being able to communicate from agency to agency, clearly get that communication rolling from one agency to another and get it where it ultimately needs to go. And that's because of radios that we may use that have are on one frequency that doesn't match the frequencies of another agency, that doesn't match the frequencies of another agency. Mm-hmm. It quite frankly doesn't take a Department of Public Safety to fix that. That is strictly a money issue. That can be driven by the legislature to say public safety is going to have a backbone of communications that everybody can hook into. This is what it's going to cost us to do this and make it happen. And it doesn't take a DPS to make that structure work.
Well, I would think Representative Petridge would look to that specific example to say, had we had that kind of a department in the past, maybe we wouldn't have that communication problem now. And certainly, you know, it may take, you know, the decision now along with the money commitment to fix that. But, you know, what's looming out there in the future that's like the communication problems that we haven't addressed, or you know, maybe like the like a terrorism issue. You know, if we're just now starting to get more and more information about, you know, how these terrorism cells or, you know, how people do what they're doing to infiltrate, what you know, maybe something pops up later that, you know, 10 years from now we say, well, gee, if we had some way to do a central correlation of this information, you know, that we could have prevented that. And 10 years from now we'll say, yeah, but if we just, you know, now we can just throw more money at it to fix it. At what point do we say that there's a need to bring somebody in to say, let's bring everybody together, as opposed to keep doing it the way we have been and say, you know, just more money is going to help this? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've been talking a lot about communication and information technology and things of that sort. And I had a bill that was in another committee, House Bill 2892, I think it was, that was designed to tweak some issues around in the information technology area. So I studied some of this as part of the process, and I certainly agree that there is a money issue. But there are also a lot of other issues that are just as important as the money issues that involve the way in which we regulate the use of information technology and the extent to which we move toward standard systems, which are going to be crucially important. Every agency in Oregon up till the last couple of years has been essentially free to develop its own computer systems, its own radio and telephone systems, separate from everybody else, using their own standards, some of them proprietary and therefore locked and unavailable to us. If we're going to make the kind of progress we need to make, we need to follow a statewide system for open standards, which will make certain that there is intercommunication between different agencies in terms of their technological capabilities, at least. And that we have the capacity to modify both IT systems and telephonic and radio systems as we need to in order to meet the new situation. Now, my bill didn't go anyplace, as it turns out, but some of that is already in the statute under the control of the Department of Administrative Services, and there are only a few little things that need to be done to make that piece of it work, at least. Now, I think it's reasonable for us to look at this structure as one possibility, but I also think it's worth looking at structures that require departments, because of the administrative rules we have through the Department of Administrative Services under the statute we already have, and perhaps a bill like mine, to get these IT systems and these radio systems and telephonic systems into a conformity with each other so that they actually can work together. It's more than just money. There's a lot of coordination that should be involved. It doesn't have to be done by developing a new department, maybe. It may be that we can do it through the structure we have now, which involves DAS. On the other hand, I think Representative Patridge's frustrations are not simply his frustrations. I think they're all of other people's frustrations, and he's casting around for a way of getting this to actually happen and not have it simply be in a statute that is supposed to come together as a result of administrative rules. So this is not a simple process, in my view. I have to tell you, as long as I'm talking, that I feel a lot more comfortable about this bill if we modified the material in line 19 on page 1 so that it was clear that we're not actually creating a department, but rather we're telling the governor to do a study to look at that as one of the ways of getting this to occur.
Thank you. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either Mr. Botwinis or Ms. Botkin, I think part of the communication discussion that we're having, aside from the information technology equipment, the hardware, if you will, I think that Representative Patridge has inferred or probably said that there is somewhat of a resistance, reticence, or even unwillingness to communicate intra-agency wide. Territorial, whatever. Would you care to comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, I can't. I'm not going to speak on behalf of some of the other agencies that would be under the DPS. But when you look at the Oregon State Police and as it is currently formatted, to make a broad-based statement that we don't want to communicate with the other agencies, I kind of look at that and I'm wondering, what does the Oregon State Police have in common with DOC, the State Parole Board, etc.? We are on one side of the fence, on the enforcement side of it, and they're on the other side of the fence, which is the criminal, the more, the courts, and you're locked up and we're going to monitor you through parole and probation, or you're going to stay in jail for a certain period of time to hopefully make you a better person when you come back out. So I guess I don't find the correlation between the Department of State Police refusing to communicate with DOC or parole and probation, because we're not like them. We don't do the same things they do. Our jobs are different.
How about, though, when there's a hole in the fence? The people, corrections all of a sudden has to call for help.
And I mean, as far as I know, our people are there. They call for help, and our people are there. I mean, we respond, we send people there. We have detectives now that we put into the prison systems that do the criminal investigations in the prison systems. That doesn't appear to me to be a lack of communication, that we have our people there, and they're doing the investigations and the reports, and I'm assuming they give them to the DOC folks, and they take care of it from there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores and Representative Verger.
Representative Backlund's here, and says Representative Barnhart.
Well, actually, they were the two that asked pretty much the same question. I think that it's important to understand that rivalry between agencies is not always a bad thing. You know, if you're struggling to be the best, and you're always struggling to be better than your colleagues, that does not that offers no disservice to the citizens of Oregon to have their public safety officials all struggling to be the best. And, in fact, I think that's a good thing. And so whether you're wearing a blue uniform or a green uniform or a brown uniform, you know, when there is a crisis in the state of Oregon, the color of the uniform makes little difference to those individuals working in that field. You know, it doesn't matter because, you know, when you're working in the floods and you're getting muddy, everybody's uniform's the same color, dirty, you know, and that's the bottom line. I think that when Mr. Botwinus and I refer to challenges in communications, we're talking about equipment challenges rather than personality challenges. And, you know, I happen to think we're all in the same field. I understand that there's differences between arresting somebody and keeping them in jail. It doesn't mean we're not kind of in the same kettle of fish, so to speak. I mean, we're all doing the same work. We're trying to keep the public safe. And, you know, just because our jobs are somewhat different between law enforcement and corrections, you know, we can make the same argument that a 911 dispatcher is significantly different than somebody answering the phone at the state penitentiary. Of course they are. But they're all in the same field, and we have to stop thinking about our differences and start thinking about our similarities. And, you know, the similarities for the citizens of Oregon, and I've said it more than once, public safety starts when your constituent, for whatever reasons, picks up a phone and dials 911. They are inextricably linked to us at some level until the end of their case. You know, that's the bottom line. And they don't see us as being different. And, again, I think we should be focusing on our similarities, not our differences, and figure out how to do a better job. Does that mean that Jim and I ought to sit in the back room and listen while you all discuss it? No, I think we all need to be talking to each other. You know, what is it? I don't even know who said it, but somebody said one time that God gave us two ears and a mouth for a reason. You know, so we could listen twice as much as we talked. And maybe we're just not listening well enough to each other about all the things that we really do need to accomplish that we agree on.
Thank you. Representative Flores.
Just a quick follow-up. Ms. Botkin, you started your comments by what I heard you say is that some level of competition does bring about some level of excellence, and that's duly noted. Thank you. We'll use it another time.
Please not in a
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Craig Campbell. Well, Mr. Campbell, you and your boss have been on the job for 6 months and you haven't solved all these problems yet?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I'm sorry. However, I think we're getting close now. Should be all taken care of very soon.
Okay, good.
For the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Governor's Office to raise some concerns about House Bill 3643. And I am going to want to enter back into the discussions that have been going on over the bill since we started, because obviously there's some critical issues here. First thing I wanted to start off by saying is I wanted to thank Representative Patridge. Although we're coming before you today to testify against the bill, he's been very good to work with throughout the session and, in fact, has been in constant contact with us about this bill and the way it's been written, so I appreciate that. Also want to mention that the purposes for this bill, which is to try and maintain some element, you can try and read along, it won't do you any good because I'm not going to follow it probably, but the goals that he's trying to achieve are laudable, and I think they're achievable without doing what the end result of this bill calls for. What 3643 does is it presupposes an end result before we really ask the question as to whether or not it's necessary. Do we need a Department of Public Safety? What House Bill 3643 doesn't do is it doesn't ask the governor's office to conduct a process where we identify whether a public safety agency is necessary. And it also doesn't ask us to identify which elements should be there. Although I do give credit to him in the second page, subparagraph 7, that it does allow us to bring up alternative forms of a Department of Public Safety. Not having a Department of Public Safety is really not one of the options that's presented. In any government process, there's going to be a pendulum swing back and forth between whether or not you want to look at an omnibus agency that tries to coordinate everything and those smaller agencies that are more focused on their mission and trying to find some balance between which really is the best approach to take. This bill, I think, certainly reflects the former of those. Last time we tried to do that was when we created the Department of Human Services. And I know that many of the elements you're talking about here today were part of the goals that were supposed to result from the creation of the Department of Human Services. And although they continue to work on those issues, there still are a number of those issues that are still present. They still have trouble with integrated computer systems, with telecommunications. So the creation of an omnibus agency doesn't necessarily solve all of your problems. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that the public safety agencies, and I have to say that they actually do cooperate very well through their budgeting process, and we may have taken a little different tack this time. We had all the agencies meet together in the development of their budgets for the governor's balanced budget when we first started the session, which I don't believe had been done before, but it gave those agencies an opportunity to come together to see what each other is doing to make sure that if we were going to go through what we anticipated were going to be substantial cuts, that they would be able to communicate with one another as to what those cuts were going to be. So the idea that they aren't working together is not an accurate description of the way they work. Do they have problems with each other at times? Certainly. Anytime you have differences of opinion, those are going to be expressed, and it makes it difficult at times to work together. But the other part of it is that the public safety system is not strictly a state system. Most of our elements are resident at the city, county, and special districts level, whether that be firefighters or police officers or chiefs or DAs. All of those are integral parts of the public safety system. And one of the concerns I have is right over time, different elements of the public safety system have learned how to work together between the state and local level. If you create a different level of authority and what may turn out to be bureaucracy, that can inhibit the kind of the free exchange of information and participation between the state and local level. That's something that we very much want to try to avoid occurring. I'm not sure that would happen, but it might. There's also a concern that I have about the disparity in size about the different state agencies that would be put under this omnibus the public safety agency. At the beginning of session, the Department of Corrections accounted for about 67% of the public safety budget, with the next two largest being state police and the Oregon Youth Authority. Usually what happens is if you have an element that is kind of ancillary to the way an agency seizes its core mission, it tends to over time be eroded. It's the place where the cuts take place because it's not really as important as our core mission. I'm concerned that if you put the Department of Corrections along with the Youth Authority, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and State Police all together, that what will happen is over time the Department of Corrections will become the main focus of the public safety agency, and those others will begin to lose some of the ground that they've been able to do as a set-aside agency. One particular example I can give you was the Oregon Youth Authority. Before the Oregon Youth Authority became a department, it was an office resident within Children's Services Division as a part of the Department of Public Safety. Any attempt to get them to be able to focus on accountability for juvenile offenders was lost within CSD's treatment mode for children. And as a result, it was not able to fulfill the mission that I think a lot of us would have liked to have seen it happen until we were able to take it out so that it could participate and focus on its own goals. And that's an example of what could happen to other elements of the public safety system if you were to put these together. So that's a concern as well. Now, I'm not saying that there may not be some reasons for us to pursue the idea of a public safety agency. I'm just concerned that the approach taken by House Bill 3643 isn't the way to do it. That's kind of, I mean, I don't want to be overly flippant, but to some extent, you could ask the governor's office to do this. I could hand you the bill back and say, here you go. Go ahead and draft it. However, I do want to indicate that we are going to be going through a process in the next 18 months. The governor's office, in conjunction with our local partners, agency representatives, and members of the legislature, are intending to conduct a pretty substantial overview of the public safety system, all the way through that system. As a result of events following 911, certainly as a result of budget cuts, and the fact that the public safety system really has not gone through a major overview, to my knowledge, ever. Some of the elements we have been based in antiquity, our court system, for instance. And over time, we have developed the system that we have, sometimes by default, sometimes by convenience, sometimes by necessity. But we've never gone back to find out whether the system we have today is really the system we would like to have. So we are going to do that during the next 18 months, and I'm certain that we are going to find things that either will come up with recommendations that we will be bringing forward to the legislature that may ask for certain elements of agencies to be combined. We may find some things that need to be separated in order for the public safety system to work more efficiently. But it's more of that bigger picture, thoughtful, overly inclusive approach that I think is going to result in much better answering some of the problems we've been addressing. I do want to point out that two areas in particular. One is telecommunications interoperability, and the other being our computer data integration. Those two areas continue to be areas of concern. The telecommunications interoperability, there's two sides of that picture. We have the State Interoperability Executive Council that is currently working on trying to develop protocols and so forth for a statewide backbone. And this is one of the other areas about a public safety agency. It actually doesn't go far enough in this area. If there were to be a natural disaster, agencies beyond those identified for a public safety system would necessarily have to be involved. Department of Transportation, the National Guard, the Health Department, departments at the local level, and of course the public safety agencies would all have to be able to communicate, hopefully seamlessly, at next to a moment's notice. So that's the goal of that entity. So that's a concern we're continuing to work on. We do recognize it as a problem. The other one is, of course, the computer systems integration. There's some realities involved here. Quite frankly, the Department of State Police, Oregon State Police, doesn't often need to pull up at a moment's notice from keyboard the record of somebody who's incarcerated in the Department of Corrections. So having a system that necessarily makes all that information available is not necessary. So money spent for that particular goal may not be a good way to go about it. Previous efforts to integrate those systems, true, they come against interagency rivalry. Sometimes it's a difference of opinion as to what sort of a computer system you want to have in place. I don't imagine I will ever get to the level of knowledge about how computers work to even want to know what the basis of those disputes are, but I do know that they occur. But if you ask agencies, what is it that you would need as a computer system, a statewide computer system for public safety, what would you want if you were given the ability to do that? How would it look? That question's never really been asked. For the most part, it's you need to integrate your system in such and such a way. Usually it's given to a particular agency whose expertise is probably not the area of computer integration, and they're almost always not given the money to do an adequate job in addressing it. Furthermore, there's always confusion. Are you asking the agencies to develop a computer system based on the resources that they have available? Or do you ask them to develop a computer system that is what they would like to see if money became available? And so until we answer those questions, it's very difficult for them to come back with an answer that's going to work for the legislative process. We're going to work with Representative Patridge during this next legislative session with the hope that we're going to take that approach and see if we can't come up with a solution, because I know it's been very frustrating for him and for other legislators trying to get a coordinated telecommunications and computer integration system with public safety and throughout the rest of state agencies. I was involved with the human resources data integration process. So it's not selected for one part of state government. I hope that at least is somewhat helpful as to the reasons why the governor is not supportive of the bill that's in front of you. I'm not saying that we wouldn't be willing to look at a process to find out whether such an agency would be needed. But this tends to be overly directive in what it's asking for. And so with that, I'll end my comments and answer any questions that may be.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I'm assuming in that long list of emergency agencies that you rattled off in talking about emergency situations that might arise, that you wouldn't mind adding to that list some people who don't actually work for state or local governments, like hospitals and medical personnel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, actually they become a critical element, because when you have casualties, you have to know where those resources are available. They have to be part of the planning process, so that you're not guessing as to whether or not the hospital is going to be able to handle the demand. And what happens if you have such a demand that the first place you need to go to automatically hits overflow? You need to have the knowledge of those people in place so that you know where to direct them to next, setting up triage and some things like that. So yes, they have to be an integral part of the discussion.
Right, and then one follow-up on that. And I'm assuming also that people other than the governor or other than the state agencies may need to be in a position to trigger emergency response on the local level when a local emergency has occurred or when statewide communications are unavailable.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, assuming you get to a situation where you have something like the Conflagration Act, where you have that's a system that works pretty well. Mm-hmm. The decisions always start at the local level, and the state only gets involved when you get a level of threat that warrants state involvement. So it's usually a local level that triggers the need for that sort of an emergency. There are going to be certain circumstances, for instance, a terrorist attack, where quite frankly it will probably be federal that will be calling the shots, although there will be first responders. For instance, an example, when the terrorist attack against the Pentagon came into place, the local police agency that was first on site continued to run the operation through the duration of the emergency, even though there was obviously federal agency, state agency involvement there. Usually they have a protocol as to first on site is the one who coordinates the rest. I'm not an expert on those areas, but that's my understanding.
And I understand all of the things that you just indicated, and I think those systems are pretty much in place. I'm really referring back to my original question, which had to do with hospitals and non-state employed medical personnel, which I think we do not currently have adequate systems in place to deal with. And I'm thinking about issues like liability issues and local coordination issues, which are not statewide or national in nature. And we recently passed a bill that will take care of a statewide call through the Office of Emergency Management. But we still don't have in place rules that allow for a local health officer or local agencies to deal either with a local emergency or with a state or national emergency in which communications breaks down. We still don't have authority in place for those people to exercise that kind of authority. And that's the reason I raised the question. I mean, in your conversations, that's got to be included in the issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I'll take that as useful input. I don't actually know how that works and what efforts are being done.
That's because it doesn't work yet.
Yeah, okay. That would explain it.
Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Craig, I was very interested in your comment that during the interim, the next 18 months, you expect to have some conversations and I assume some analyses aimed at increasing efficiencies and perhaps inter-department cooperations. You might look and you'll see that the competition that Mary Bodkin talked about is either good or bad, but there is competition. If your analyses and conversations come to naught in the way of satisfactory conclusions, Would you be offering a plan for some perhaps reorganization similar to this bill or to some other form?
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, the effort is really to find out whether or not something like that would be necessary and whether changes in the system are necessary. So if we don't find something that indicates that that sort of approach is necessary, you won't see a bill under our process. On the other hand, if when we go through this process we do see a need for that, then you will see a bill along those lines. It's kind of hard to see, with the exception of the fact that if we take on too much all at once, in our review, we may not be able to come up with final findings before the next legislative process begins. I can certainly see where that might be a possibility if we find a lot of work there. But I don't see an area where it would otherwise fail and need to result in a default of a public safety agency.
Follow up. Thank you. One of the reasons I signed on to this bill, as you noted prior to the meeting, okay, is that a constituent of mine, a retired state police officer, suggested quite strongly that we needed reorganization and we needed the Department of Public Safety, and I offered him a chart of how this bill would work out. And he was basically positive. So his experiences were such that he thought this bill was a good thing. And that's from his perspective, and I understand there are other perspectives, but that is a reason why I was interested in it, plus the fact that Representative Patridge did have some considerable experience having been in public safety for two consecutive sessions. So, for whatever that's worth.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, as dangerous it is just to run down the road of creating a Department of Public Safety, it's as dangerous to just dismiss it out of hand. So I would imagine that there's very good reasons why the constituent you talked to felt that that was necessary. Mm-hmm. Hopefully in the process of what we do, we'll learn whether or not that balances out against other people's concerns with the idea of putting such an agency together. And of course, that isn't really the goal of what we're doing. We're really trying to find out whether or not the system works well, and if it doesn't work well, how it needs to be changed. So it isn't going into it with the idea of, well, is a public safety agency that really what we're looking at. But hopefully we'll hear from your constituent and others who have a like mind about these issues.
Further questions? Representative Berger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Craig, I want to thank you very much for your what I call good testimony, because I have share your concerns about this particular bill. I'm not saying that there aren't some things that need to be accomplished, and I was encouraged by the fact that you're going to be meeting. I think that we live in a different world today. And I say that because of my district on the Oregon coast, and we are very aware that we are a gateway to the rest of the country, and the international crises that exist. I also think that there's something that needs to be done as a part of your 18 months looking at these departments, and that is, I don't think we build our public safety officials and our law enforcement people up enough. I think that we need to create an image of true respect for those individuals who put their life on the line every day, and whether it's local government or whether it's the Oregon State Police, you're involved at the state level, but I can tell you that many local police look to the Oregon State Police with great respect and dream of someday becoming an Oregon State Policeman. So I think that there is a camaraderie or that feeling among a lot of the agencies that's very positive. But I think as we look at other states, and I would say to the north of us, where they've had crisis after crisis and lack of respect for the law enforcement people going in to deal with those crises, in Oregon, we need to get our arms around that and do what we can to help boost the morale and the attitudes of those that are involved. In our own state police, where we have had to have budget cuts, we lost over half of each office of the state police on the Oregon coast in District 9. The reason for that was they were the last hired. So last in, first out. and you had put and invested, the state had invested a lot of money in them. They were potentially so bright, and as I visited with seven of them, to see them go and to lose them to other states and other activities made me very sad. And so I think that we need to really, truly reevaluate the efficiencies. If we can come up with savings that keep us from doing what we had to do in this last budget cut, I would be very supportive of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, thank you for those comments. Obviously, it's very important for local law enforcement and state law enforcement to know that they're supported. They do phenomenal work, often in very difficult situations, sometimes without adequate backup. And obviously, the funding issue is one, and I'll never one to miss an opportunity. The governor, obviously, is very interested in finding a dedicated funding source for state police. Over the last several years, state police has continued to see budget reductions at times when other states are actually enhancing their state police. So that is something that is something we're dedicated to. So thank you very much for raising the issue. And Mr. Chair, forgive me for taking advantage of it.
Okay, I haven't yet heard the governor willing to take that on without adding to the gas tax, though. Just wondering. Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, sir. No one else listed to testify? Anybody out here in the audience wants to testify? All right. We will then close our public hearing on House Bill 3643. And, colleagues, it's looking like we won't have a meeting tomorrow afternoon, so we'll be back again on Tuesday for our next hearing.
Thank you.
So, thank you again, and we are adjourned.
Happy Independence Day.
Yes.